Welcome to the afternoon Vision 2020 panel. Today, our esteemed panelists are going to show you the way forward, what it looks like getting from here to 100% renewables in 2050. So I'm honored to be here on this panel among my esteemed colleagues. Our first panelist is Nicole Tumeyer from Alliant Energy. She is responsible for directing the market, the energy market trading, energy risk management, fossil fuel procurement, and energy market operation activities at Alliant Energy. As of 2018, Alliant had an 18% renewable energy portfolio mix, and by 2020, Alliant will own 12 wind farms with a total of almost 1,900 megawatts, powering almost 600,000 homes. Alliant has also recently announced a major commitment to renewable to solar energy generation, and we are looking forward to seeing what that brings in Wisconsin. Our next panelist is Sri, the founder of Zerology, and Zerology is this ride-sharing and EV company that is partnering with Green Cab to bring you totally emission-free rides here in Madison. And finally, we have Russell Minnick. He's the Chief Marketing Officer and Clean Energy Business Leader from Generac. Generac is a 1,500-person company here in Wisconsin that has been around since the 50s and produces generators, but also produces another suite of goods, and they are getting into the renewable energy space. Generac announced in 2019 that they have a fully integrated battery storage system and home energy management system with the ability to allow customers to use stored energy during peak times when electricity prices are high, and to store solar energy when there is excess. So I'm very excited to have all these panelists here today. And we will be taking questions from the audience. So there's still note cards on tables and there's still pens. So as you think of questions during the conversation, please go ahead and write your question down and flag down one of the staff or volunteers and they'll bring them up here. We want this to be a really interactive conversation. So without further ado, let's dig into the conversation. So, Nicole, I'd like to start with you. Can you talk a little bit about Alliant's investment in renewables and why you're growing your renewable portfolio?
Well, it's interesting. I think about the Field of Dreams movie, and it kind of reminds me of our story with renewables. It kind of started in Iowa, and I'm an Iowa native, transplanted here to Wisconsin 3 years ago. Always been a Packer fan, though, so fit right in. But really, we started seeing developers coming into the state. And one of the advantages I think we have here in the Midwest is land. And really, that's kind of where it really kicked off. And in Iowa, we saw there was a strong wind profile in the state. You know, now when I go home and I drive through Iowa and, you know, you see all the beautiful fields and then you come to just so many different wind farms along the state. And it's interesting because it gives me a sense of just happiness and joy when I see that and see how the state has really changed and has that strong renewable energy footprint. So it really started, it kind of started there. And now I think that the differences that we've seen between the states, Iowa versus Wisconsin, a lot of it has to do with the wind profiles, and then now we see developers, projects coming into the state. I think we talked about there's over six gigawatts of renewable solar projects in the MISO queue. And so we really have this opportunity now to capitalize on all of the advancements with solar panel technologies, the investment tax credits, this really great, you know, plethora of solar projects in the state. And, you know, it's just, we see Wisconsin as kind of the place to really evolve and take solar. And that's really what we want to do. Just like many other utilities, I mean, and companies out there, industrial, commercial, consumers, you know, we all want to have a part in it. We all want to advance it. And so why now? A lot of it is because of the technologies, the economic benefits, the opportunities we have here in the Midwest really to set ourselves apart from potentially the rest of the United States as very progressive with our renewable portfolios.
That's exciting. And I'll pose that to you, Sri, and to Russ as well. Can you tell us why your companies are refocusing and focusing entirely from the get-go on renewable energy technology?
Sure. For me, it comes more from the perspective of need, right? I think the need of the hour is emission control. If you look at utilities, you look at transportation, even right now transportation is worse. It became the worst contributor of CO2 emissions. So this is significant climatic impact, and unless we act now and act fast, it will be too late, right? Our next generations would not be around, for not have a good time, but will not be around. So that's my motivation, is what can we do to actually tackle this problem of emissions? How do you tame the beast, right? So how do you do it? One of them starts from my perspective is reducing consumption. Another one is moving the consumption to a better quality consumption. Right? That's the reason the electric vehicle introduction into the market, when you overlay it with the utilities which are generating the electricity, it provides an amazing opportunity and a great challenge. Right? The opportunity is all of a sudden you got this heavy draw on the electricity, and if you're able to smartly charge the draw when there is excess capacity on the grid, when it is off-peak time, that's an amazing opportunity. But if the same thing, if you move into the middle of the day, you kill and exacerbate the problem because all of a sudden you're creating so much additional peak demand. Environmentally, it doesn't make sense. Economically, it doesn't make sense because peak rates are peak rates. That is where the combination of solar comes into play. So what if we're able to run an electric fleet of vehicles which are shared, which are being charged with wind in the night and solar in the morning? That's how I'm thinking about it.
Very exciting. And Russ, tell us about how Generate got into this space.
Yeah, first of all, we're about 5,500 employees, not 1,500.
Oh,
so
thank
we're
you.
A little bit bigger than that. I think first for us, it was a really attractive market in terms of clean energy. It was growing really, really quickly. We're a generation company, so storage makes sense to generate and store. I think there was both an offensive element and a defensive element to it. I think defensively, the efficiency of panels and the technology of batteries and the power density of batteries, all were creating a cost curve that we're going to intersect internal combustion engines, and we see that obviously in automotive on a dollar per kilowatt basis right now. So if we wouldn't have done it, someone would have done it to us, I think. But beyond that, it's a really attractive market. It's Wood Mackenzie's got really crazy hockey stick looking projections out there, but I just talked with them yesterday, and in fact they keep re-projecting them. They keep getting steeper because they keep exceeding what's going on. So the attachment of storage to solar, it has to catch up, right? Mm-hmm. And it is. And so that's we got really excited about that. We also had really good, I think, fit in terms of technical capabilities. We've been, as you said, we're 60 years old this year, and we've been making power electronics for decades. And Mr. Kern, our founder, who's, I think he's 98 this year, he still lives down the street, but he was an engineer by trade. So we're kind of a techie group to begin with. So it fit really well with what we were doing. So we're excited to get into it. We launched December 3rd. We went to SPI, we showed, and then we launched December 3rd, and meaning deliveries and things like that. And it's been a raucous welcome into the space. We've been shocked. We were a little concerned, frankly. We thought, okay, we're natural gas burners and we're going to be looked at as dinosaurs. But actually, the industry has put an arm around us and helped us along nicely. So it's been great that way.
That's great. Can you say a little bit about, have your customers really been asking for this product?
Yeah, I mean, we've got we sell different channels, but our primary channel is about 6,300 dealers. I think Arch is in here somewhere. They're one of them. We've got a lot of aligned dealers across the country. They're all electricians in every case, and so I think it's a pretty some do solar already, and others don't, but they're really excited about getting on the roof and getting going. So not everybody, not all 6,300 will jump into the solar and storage space, but we believe a good percentage will. And even customers, you know, one of our bigger customers in the company is Home Depot, and even people like Home Depot are really excited about getting displays in stores and doing deals. So, yeah.
Great. Okay, so I have a question for all the panelists. In your respective industries, what do you think about the potential for scaling up to 100% renewable? Let me start with Nicole.
Okay. So I think back to, you know, a famous quote by John Kennedy where he talked about the space race and that we are choosing to go to the moon in this decade and do other things, not because they're easy, but because they are hard. And to me, that is the road to 100% renewables. We know we need to get there. It may not be an easy path. We don't exactly know how it will end up, but you've got to start. And I think that there are a lot of collaborations that need to take place. And the biggest part of that is all of us, consumers, business owners, really taking accountability for our part. And so we're going to see this world where maybe it's not just the utility alone that can do this. And we're going to be working on how we use both, you know, the utility scale, renewable energy, how do we start layering in battery storage, the solar and the wind complement each other, how do we look at peak load reduction, energy efficiency programs, demand response, how does all of that come together with technological advancements to be able to really interconnect all energy that is being produced, all battery storage, so that we're using all of it cohesively into our grid. And I think back to when we first transitioned to an independent system operator, we all, as utilities, used to manage our generation assets independently. And the reason the ISOs were created was really to create more efficiencies and optimize the entire system. And that, I think, is really what it's going to take to get there. It's going to take a collaborative effort of everyone and cross not just utilities. We talked about the vehicle industries to really get us there. But it's achievable. Probably going to be some new technological advancements. But to me, that's what's really exciting is how it will end up and looking back in 20 years and saying, wow, we were all a part of that transition.
So I have slightly different perspective on the difficulty aspect of it, right? Yes, a decade back, it was like inconceivable. But as Russ was mentioning, the battery cost curve, how much it has come down by 90% in the last 10 years. So the way I look at it is, all the components that are required for change exist. What we lack is sufficient motivation. This is a classic case of innovator's dilemma, right? What has happened historically for the last 100 years, we have done things a certain way. We're trying to take all these greatest of the innovations that are available today, solar dropping to less than $2 if you're doing it at scale, battery coming down to significantly where every household can have a battery storage, and my electric vehicles, what we drive, they're frankly batteries on wheels, right? So there is an opportunity. If you think about it innovatively, there's so much that can be done. What has not kept pace with is age-old regulation, right? We need to go back and challenge ourselves to rethink through this, saying that there are a lot of opportunities here. If we go back to the drawing board and ask ourselves, can we think about it differently? When steel was invented, we did not go to all the wooden bridges and take away each of the beams and replace them with a girder. It would have collapsed on its own weight, right? We rethought through the engineering of how do you redesign bridges. That's what we need to do is how do we redesign power generation, power distribution. Distributed energy resources is an answer. Microgrids is an answer. All these opportunities are there. We need to think about where they fit. One size doesn't fit all, right? They all need to coexist, play with the existing infrastructure. They need to be thought through. I understand. But what I'm saying is I feel that all the ingredients, necessary ingredients for success are here. We need to get people motivated. Some people come very happily to the table. Others need to be dragged to the table. At the end of the day, it's a highly collaborative exercise. All of us need to just get it done. We can.
Absolutely.
That's right, Sri. Now, I think, you know, we've just recently in the country transitioned from coal being our baseline power to natural gas. And we've got a lot of natural gas. We have accidental natural gas in the U.S. It's a byproduct of chasing oil around the Bakken and stuff like that. So we've got so much natural gas, we light it on fire and burn it for free. So I think natural gas is a bridge fuel to renewables. You know, realistically, it's probably going to be a pretty efficient thing. I guess the bottom line is economics are such a big part of it. And it's such a, it's like swimming in a river with a brick in each hand upstream. It's like hard to beat economics. And so I think that's the reality of it. But there's some key things that have to happen to get there. And I think, you guys have touched on some of them. I think one of them is you have to time shift it. No matter if it comes off a wind turbine or if it comes off the roof, you have to time shift it to the time it's needed to get the most out of it. And then I think the ability to link together distributed energy assets, both residential, commercial, and industrial are super, super key. When you look at the attachment rates of battery, again, I think by 2025, 2026, you've got a pretty high attachment rate. There'll be a lot of kilowatt hours of battery sitting in residential homes and in commercial businesses that, if harnessed correctly, could certainly carry you through the night and peak loads and things like that. We see Hawaii and California with California Rule 21 Phase 3, which goes into effect, I think, January 22nd this year, is two leading states where they do have policy in place where you can at least have the capability of the utility company reaching into the inverter and harnessing the use of those batteries, which is, I don't understand why everybody doesn't do that. I mean, that's just common sense. And if you can do it in two states, you can certainly do it in 48 others. As a manufacturer, it doesn't matter where you do it. It's once you get through the technological hurdle of doing it is all it is. So I think, the economics are key and that collision course is coming. And, I think the policy around, harnessing the distributed energy resources that we have and will have at an accelerating pace is what's critical.
Thank you. So, keep in mind that your questions can be asked and answered as well. So please send those note cards up to us. So I'm going to ask my panelists, something that I like to think about, often. If I were queen for a day, how would I change the world? And specifically, how would you change the world to scale up to 100% renewable? What one change would you make in any type of way, queen or king for a day? What would you do, Nicole?
Wow, one change. It's hard to limit the options. But one of the things that holds us back, it's really a process and time. These processes take a lot of time from the time you apply to bring a new renewable resource onto the system, on the transmission side of things. It can be a 3-year process just to get through a study. And things like, we talked about, working with landowners, working with communities, working with the regulators. It's a cumbersome process. So if I could change one thing, it would be to change that process to be faster. So where you could get through stuff, in a matter of a year, and instead of, potentially what can end up being a 3 to 5 year planning horizon. So to get faster and to bring more things on, we've got to think about how we can be more efficient with these processes and working with, MISO and working with FERC on, how we can utilize battery storage and different technologies. And it's cumbersome now, right? I would say.
Great.
So I do not know to answer the question on a personal level or the industry level. What?
It's a wide open question.
So at a personal level, yep, absolutely. As I said, there is a lot of opportunity now to be more energy efficient, right? There are LEDs, there are so many HVACs and Nest thermostats, and there's so many small things what you could do to reduce the consumption. The best thing we could do is start there, right? So irrespective of what is the nature of the source of your energy, if you consume less. Same thing for transportation. Instead of everybody taking their car and going there on the Beltline and creating congestion in the morning, 65% of people are driving alone. Why not participate in car share programs, or why not employers promote, provide van pooling options so that more people can kind of go to work together from a similar area to same destination kind of a thing. All this what we would immediately impact. Right? Tomorrow you can do that and make a change kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. In the main, yes, absolutely agree with Nicole's comment that we got to fast track these processes, right? The bureaucracy had to be unraveled. This is ridiculous that it takes weeks and months for every single thing. People, there are all smart people, right? We can get together and have parallel processes to fast track. Mm-hmm. Even central government has some ways to fast track grants. Why can't we implement something at the state level, right? Some of the bureaucracy need to be unraveled.
That's great. Mm-hmm.
Can a king fire a president? Is that part of the deal? Is that, I'm in Madison. I can say that, right? In Madison. If I said that in Milwaukee, I'd have to run right now. But yeah, no. I think having leadership that's trying to wake up coal mines isn't helping. I think Nicole's dead on. I think when I look at, as frustrating as it is to try to sell stuff to utility companies, it must be equally as frustrating. This, the amount of regulation and the amount of compliance and things, like we've installed 2 million home standby generators around the United States for backup power. It takes one day. There's no interconnection stuff. You're not going through any of that stuff. An average residential solar deal in California takes 90 days. Sometimes more. It is absolutely an obstacle. It's like working through a layer of clay. It's hard, and a lot of it is not super value added, and should be streamlined, I think.
And as you said, so we see that at the utility scale, we see that at the residential scale, that permitting, those soft costs, well, they're hard costs, I'm sure, at utility scale, but those delays and those questions can really slow down a project and raise prices.
And so many of those were put in place originally to make sure that to actually protect consumers,
right.
I guess, ultimately, right? And,
right.
And now it's actually having the opposite effect, so.
Right.
Well, I agree with that, right? There's a lot of interest in private investments in the energy space, right? Mm-hmm. But the current structures and policies, which were very created for the very purpose of protecting the consumers, not working in the best interest of the consumer when you are blocking the consumer from doing their own energy generation and utilization, right? So the motivations are not aligned anymore. So we need to go back and ask whatever that we created 100 years back, is it still relevant? Should we be thinking about it differently today? Mm-hmm. We're living in a different world.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Okay. So you've mentioned earlier partnerships. I'd like to hear from all of you. What types of collaborations need to happen to help the renewable energy industry grow more rapidly and to scale up? And what should we be exploring that we haven't thought of yet in respect to partnerships and collaboration?
To me, a lot of this gets back to really that we do have to come together collectively and really look at how we can both cross-benefit, right, for the good of the system, the good of, the sustainability, really, of our Earth. And so it's got to be a combination of, for us, we're looking at, well, how do we benefit from everything that's available to us? So we talked about, we want to be working with, battery storage to really help balance out, peak load shaving. How do we look at bringing that down so that you really can get to a grid that's 100% renewable and reliable? But it's going to take, it's going to take those collaborations. It's also going to take, being able to access, like you said, it's not just the utility scale energy resources anymore. It's also the distributed side of the grid. And so we've got to work with communities. We've got to be prepared. We have to have an infrastructure and system in place so that we can really kind of harness all of that and utilize it together. So it's also creating awareness in, I think, what everyone can do and what everybody's part in it is, and collaboration on, you know, viewing renewables as, you know, not an eyesore. So I was able to hear Bob, who talked about
Bob Bishop,
who was a landowner on the Badger Hollow Solar Project, and one of the things he mentioned was that, you know, there's still a lot of perception out there that, you know, we don't want this. People want renewables, but we don't want to see it. We don't want it in our backyard. And we've got to change that. You know, when I, like I said, when I drive through Iowa and I see all the wind turbines, it fills me with a sense of pride. I'm looking forward to driving through Wisconsin and seeing all the solar farms and being excited about it. And so it's also changing our cultures and our attitudes about energy. You know, energy should be exciting for everybody and not viewed as the, you know, well, I've got to pay my bill, I get it. But it's also advancing a lot of the technologies, and it's advancing kind of the future. So people should get excited about how they can participate.
Absolutely. The education, that brings point of education. We got some questions coming up, okay? So the fear and uncertainty and doubt about these innovations, right? So if people come together and understand and they're better educated, we can actually collectively make, we will quickly realize all our motivations are more aligned than we are thinking, right? We want a cleaner world, better world, right? So it's I think lack of information and misinformation is creating the fear and uncertainty and doubt and lack of trust between the various stakeholders.
Right. I think from our perspective as a manufacturer, you know, there's 50 states, and within states there's counties. There's so many rules on how you have to make and program software, firmware, your product. It's very little uniformity, and same with tariff rates, and there's time of use things you got to prepare for, and arbitrage, and there's more like Michigan markets where they have a lot of power outages, and it doesn't create a uniform product offering. We have a lot of resources doing nothing but adjusting all the time to a different utility company or a different state or a different code or a different level of compliance. States don't even adapt compliance at the same time. NEC 2020 is just launching, and California is getting ready to adopt NEC 2017. I mean, so you're all over the board on this stuff, and those all have impacts on the products, and so it adds cost and slows you down and actually chases away more competitors in the space, which is good for the consumer. I mean, companies like Fronius almost packed up and went home over, just can't even keep up with the compliance side of it. But so I would just say uniform set of rules and a uniform set of interfaces with utility. As much uniformity as we could get would take cost out and drive speed.
That's great. It's almost like you read the mind of the person who just wrote a question. To build on that, what policies can Renew and organizations like Renew and other advocates support to help your companies and your industries to use more clean energy?
I can give my perspective. Energy charging infrastructure is going to be a big challenge and a great opportunity. I think what Renew can do is help us to get to the point where it is more federated, allowing people to, private organizations to be able to put in charging infrastructure and being able to put it out to use. Now it is constrained. You cannot sell kilowatt hour because you're not a utility, right? Mm-hmm. So like that, you can help with the policies that will open up a lot more investment opportunities. Similarly, we want utilities as well to invest in that, but it should not be as a utility, right? So we need to open up the playing ground to everybody to build the charging infrastructure, because it is, the cost unit level economics are not working out yet. So that means everybody need to be given an opportunity and required to participate in that.
Specifically for Wisconsin, I wish there was more arbitrage between the rates. We've got pretty cheap, I mean, we're 15 cents on an average or something like that, right, in Wisconsin, and it's, you know, not the most sun abundant state in the country. So it from a solar perspective and from a storage perspective, Places that don't have a ton of sun, take like in Massachusetts, New York, New Jersey, they have some pretty broad time of use rates, which creates a lot of arbitrage opportunity and incentive for consumers to jump on board. And they couple that, of course, with really aggressive state goals. Governor Cuomo's put in really aggressive zero emission goals by certain dates and things like that, and then all the incentives roll off of that. And so Wisconsin specifically, if that's what we're talking about, could drive more consumer behavior and create an environment that would make renewables, a bigger appetite for renewables at the household level.
That's great. Thank you. Yeah. So I have a specific question for Nicole about Alliance Solar. Where will these 1,000 megawatts of solar projects be sited?
Well, they're all going to be in Wisconsin, we're not necessarily ready to release exactly which specific counties, but we are working with developers basically all over the state. But they all will be in Wisconsin.
Okay, great. Thank you. I have a question for you all about equity. So this is a rapidly growing industry. There are so many things happening and there's so many jobs. How do we ensure that the benefits, both the jobs benefits and the savings on electric bills benefit the people who need it most, the people who need the most economic opportunity? What can your respective companies and industries do to ensure that renewable energy is equitable as it grows and becomes a bigger and bigger part of our economy?
Well, one of the things I think about is, you know, leveraging things like the community solar projects to where, you know, folks that, you know, not everybody's going to be able to, you know, afford to put their own solar panels on their houses or put their own battery charging on. And so having, you know, economically priced products that people can participate in, that maybe there's state funding for also into those programs, is really part of the solution.
Great, community solar. Thank you.
I think there is a lot of interest both on the commercial side, for profit side, as well as non-profit and philanthropy to help roll out more of these renewable energy sources as distributed energy resources. What is coming in our way is the current policy, once again, kind of a thing, right? So if we can figure out a way of making it work. You can put in those renewable sources as community gardens, so community solar garden, right in the community, and protect the utility from big upload by having it isolated at the microgrid. Like that, there is enough technologies out there, enough people who are interested in doing that. I think those are the kind of projects what we need to promote. Take Toka low-income area or 10 miles from away from here and do that. And from my own industry, what I'm operating in, which is vehicles, one of the biggest opportunities is to kind of run micro shuttles and other things where the city buses are not able to reach because the buses are big and large and it's a waste of resources. We can deploy electric vehicles, we're looking into 19-seaters kind of a thing to do the first mile, last mile, so that we can reach out to the disenfranchised or people who are living further away and take people from where they live to where the work is so that that creates better economic development opportunities and uplift the income levels, which will have more lasting effect on their families and societies.
I think the power agreement approach, like that Sunrun and Sunnova and Vivint and some of the larger solar companies in the country uses, is really good for all demographics and socioeconomic status people, because it's essentially you're just agreeing to buy power from them. Not so hot for you, probably. But you're just agreeing to buy power from them, and all that gear goes on for free. And so those type of financial instruments, and then they package those up, and then they can go out and resell those as a financial instrument. And those type of agreements, I think, give access to virtually almost anybody to do that. Yeah. I would say also from a jobs standpoint, one thing we've saw, which is we didn't think about so much when we were doing it, but you know, it's hard to hire now. The unemployment rate's very low. Wisconsin's economy is hot. Milwaukee, where we're at, is particularly hot, and a lot of major companies down there, Johnson and Rockwell and us and Harley and Briggs and everybody else. And so, being in clean energy has been really nice, particularly with the younger, the younger worker. They often say, if I'm going to spend, you know, 40, 50, 60 hours a week doing something, I'd rather do something like that every day. And so it's really helped us from a recruiting and from a corporate branding standpoint to be in the space. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So what are you all most excited about? This is, we're beginning another decade. What do you think, where do you want to see us in 2030? What do you hope to see and what are you looking forward to?
In 30 years?
No, well.
Honestly, I'm looking forward to like maybe Hawaii or something like 30 years from now. That'd be great. Being alive, how about that?
I'm wondering about the middle ground, 2030. Where?
That is.
Yeah.
More measurable.
Yeah. I just think that, and again, I when you look at the Wood Mackenzie and Bloomberg and other forecasts, the rapid pace of the technology improvements is really going to enable these radical step changes. I mean, the CAGR in all this, all the spaces, all the renewable spaces, is double digit or in some cases triple digit. I mean, it's really, really exciting that, and we're going to be able to all live and see that happen in our lifetime. So I think that's super cool. Yeah.
I'm super psyched for the next 10 years, right? So the three biggest things I think 2030 will not be like 2020 at all. Right. So there's big, humongous shifts that are going to happen, like the trends what you're talking about, BNEF and others, what they're publishing. If you, any of you remember the CDs to the MP3 transition? Right?
What did those transition? What?
Huh? Compact disc to the MP3 players. Yeah, how quickly that has happened. That's what we are looking at is, it will be almost like a shark fin. It's not going to be gradual, linear kind of a change. We hit a tipping point where the adoption significantly start increasing. Thereby, basically, there are three component factors in terms of the transportation. First, what will happen is electric vehicle adoption will increase, but more importantly, not from individual consumers, but more with fleet companies. Who can, because unit level economics, you can make sense out of it, kind of a thing. That will impact car buying. Already car, internal combustion engine vehicles have peaked. So that will drop precipitously in the coming years. All of a sudden, the net effect of this is transportation costs will come down significantly. The cost of transportation, so the future is going to be in transportation as a service, where if it is affordable, it is ubiquitous, it is wherever, so that you do not need to own personal vehicles kind of a thing. That massive shift will happen in the next decade, for sure, from my perspective. Similarly, the power generation, what we're talking about, it is going to, the renewables will, adoption will peak through the next 10 years. That is my personal belief. But when you come to predictions, everybody is a visionary, right? So everybody has a different perspective. I truly believe that in the next decade, the amount of change that will happen in the power generation, consumption, and the quality of life, and how integrated we will be. The surface of the downtown areas will significantly move and to become a land use thing where we do not need as many parking lots as we need. All of a sudden it opens up opportunities for building more multi-tenant high-rises, thereby reducing the need for transportation further. So we are at a point of inflection here. In the next decade we will see amazing change, is my belief.
Well, when I think about just our progression from, you know, bringing on wind, now we're advancing solar. I mean, obviously, you start layering in the battery storage, and now we're getting somewhere, right? And I think that that goes back to that question that everybody has in the back of their mind when they think about, well, how are we still going to be reliable, right? And I think we're going to solve that problem, and it's going to be sooner than we realize. So a lot of our companies, a lot of utilities you've seen, they'll have a goal, you know, I think our goal, 80% reduction by 2050. I think we're going to blow that away, and maybe it's by 2030. So I do think that we're going to see things happen quickly. I think we are about at that tipping point. And so I'm excited to see how it happens and how it comes together. And it's just great to see so many people here and hear about everything that's happening. There's a lot more happening in Wisconsin than I was even aware of on the renewable projects and things that our communities are doing. So it's great to see and that collaboration with others and everybody coming together gives me hope that we will get there, and it's going to be, I agree, I think it's going to be sooner than we anticipate.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement here. We've been talking among the staff today that, you know, we started this week, I think we had less than 500 people registered, and there are well over 600 people here today. So the excitement is growing every day and every month that we work on renewable energy, and it's really all thanks to you. So thank you for being here. I've got one last question I think that might be interesting. Our keynote speakers spoke a little bit about performance-based models for utility profit models. Would you like to weigh in on what you hope to see in utility business model reform so that utilities can stay viable as things are changing, as there's more distributed coming on the grid and people want to be able to even island from the grid at certain times? What are you hoping to see as that evolves?
I definitely think that there's discussion that needs to happen about what and how that will benefit both consumers, that will benefit utilities. I don't know how that will end up. I don't know how it will look. But I think the good news is that I personally believe, and this is from, you know, my company, what I've seen with Align Energy, that, you know, our perspectives are changing too. We're changing as a utility. And so we're open to listening, we're open to hearing, we're open to new ideas, and we have to be to advance, you know, renewables. And so I think it's, you know, those discussions are gonna happen, and we're willing to look at, you know, opportunities. Just not quite sure how it's gonna look, but it's great to see what's happening across, you know, the rest of the United States.
I mean, why couldn't Blockbuster have been Netflix? And I think utility companies are in a situation right now that they can be part of a distributed solution and part of virtual power plant planning and operations if they decide to do so.
We've talked about it. I mean, virtual power plants is a possibility, right? But we get back to the processes, and a lot of things and changes
have to happen to
be able to aggregate that energy and use consumers' energy on behalf of the whole grid. So it's going to take time and figuring out how to do that.
I see the opportunity here for those who are more forward-thinking and the utilities who really would like to accelerate the progression to the 100% renewability. There are opportunities here too for public-private utility partnership and go define projects where significant social good can be created and go and recommend it to the regulators like PSE and say, hey, this is what we would like to do. Rather than waiting and expecting PSE to change, we can actually, few of us can come together and say, offer a project. Let's get a blessing for a particular thing which will be a demonstration project which can show it doesn't cost a whole lot to do a lot of good.
Wonderful. I think that's a great note to end on. Thank you all so much for being here. I'm really excited that you were here today. And thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, panelists. Is this on? No? This is on. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, so much. We have one more speaker today, and that is Ed Zinthifer from Arch Electric, our third presenting sponsor. So everybody, please welcome Ed.
Thank you, Tyler. My name is Ed Zinthifer, Arch Electric, founder since 2003. And I just want to thank Renew for everything that they put together here. Right now, I'm the only thing that's holding you from the social cocktail hour, so I'll be very quick, very brief. So we've been involved with renewables since the beginning, and it was kind of one of those industries when we started as trades individuals, electricians, licensed electricians, and doing constructions, things of that nature. We were one of the outliers in the industry, and we were actually urged to go back to typical construction. However, I chose a different path, and that path was renewable energy. One of the things that we found was a challenge was to continue to grow a workforce, and we've met the demands of that workforce over the years. By meeting those demands, my point is to give you a flavor of what we've experienced since the beginning of our business. Is the first decade or so, we installed about 1.6 megawatts of solar. In 2017, we installed another 1.6 megawatts, which was huge for us at the time. In 2018, by the 31st of March, we installed another 1.6 megawatts of solar, and that is on the roof that we see right there. And the interesting part about that, to accomplish that task, we didn't really put our foot on the gas yet. We were actually utilizing other electricians, staff that we already had in place. We added a couple of people along the way, but our goal was really to promote renewables, offer good jobs, a career progression for those that want to be in the industry. As of 2019, we installed 9 megawatts of solar, which was really huge for us. And it was just kind of comfortable for us to get that done. And we really plan on putting our foot on the gas now in 2020. And right now we have visibility to about 25 megawatts. And we're kind of excited to be involved in the industry now. Thank you. Our mission is to educate, inspire current and future generations to choose a clean, sustainable form of energy. And we have visions and values, and feel free to read that because I'm not going to hold you from social hour. And not only thank you for being in attendance here, thank you, Tyler.
You bet. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Ed, for all your support.
Appreciate it.
Well, I want to do one more, a couple of announcements. Number one is we have evaluations that are now on the tables in front of you. We do really value your feedback and input, so if you have time to do that, we will also email that out probably early next week to you to fill out online. It'll be the same thing, but if you want to fill it out while it's really fresh in your head, we would really value that, and you can drop those at the registration tables. I'd like to do one more round of applause, please, for our panelists and speakers today. I thought we had a great day. Want to thank my team and our staff here at Renew Wisconsin. So I've got Heather here. If anybody else is in the room, please say thank you to Michael, to Jody and Kristen, who did really great work putting this on and why it runs so smoothly and looks so beautiful. We really, really appreciate their work in putting this on, and all the staff for participating and making this successful, as well as the volunteers. We had a number of volunteers in the back of the room in our breakout sessions that really help make the day go smoothly. So please, a round of applause for our team and our volunteers. And then finally, as Ed said, thank all of you. Thanks for being here. We hope it was a great day. We're going to go to social hour now out here in this Grand Terrace area. So feel free to get some snacks and a beverage and continue the networking. Again, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.